Welcome to As the Story Grows. I'm Brian Patton. Today, I'm stoked to welcome Chad Ruhlig from For the Fallen Dreams to the podcast. For the Fallen Dreams will release their self-titled album this Friday, March 10th, on Arising Empire Records. Chad talks about the impact nu metal had on his life, the hardcore scene around Lansing, his relationship with Rise Records, moving to a European label, shifting sound as a band, and much, much more. So I hope you guys enjoy today's chat with Chad Ruhlig from For the Fallen Dreams. How's tour going?
It's going great, man. We've hit some very interesting weather the past week. It always blows my mind when I see a tour at Matt, and it's like, oh, end of winter, spring, and we're going through every pass imaginable in the United States. That's always interesting and fun, yeah. But it keeps us on our toes, I suppose. But aside from that, the shows have been absolutely amazing. The fans have been great. The touring party, it's a very very welcomed back tour for us, 3.5 years later, to be back out here and see all the fans and to be with a bunch of killer bands. So yeah, all is good.
That's rad. You guys playing a lot of new stuff on tour?
It's a good mixture, man. We're playing a lot of the singles that we dropped over the course of the past summer and fall. But you know, considering where we're at this type of tour, you know, it's a little bit heavier. Hmm. And a little bit, you know, more nostalgic for a lot of these fans that are coming out, right? So we really wanted to still curate a set that kept fans happy. You know what I mean? And you know, still push the needle forward with our new material and what we're doing now and the heights we're trying to reach. But at the same time, still making it a fun show for the fans. You know what I mean? And I've talked to the. Every night has been, you know, multiple, you know, fans coming up and saying, thank you so much for playing old stuff, but why didn't you play this song or that song? It's like, guys, we're direct support, and there's 7 albums to go across.
So right.
It's hard to please everybody, but I feel as if we did a very good job with mixing in a lot of new and old and kind of just having a fun ride of a set throughout.
Yeah. And you're like, that record is so old. Why do you want songs from that?
I know. Last night, I was like, oh, hey, man, next time I'm going to need to hear Last Dying Breath. I'm like, that's fair enough. But let's wait for the 20-year tour, and you can hear it all at the same time.
let's jump back in time. You grew up in Lansing?
I grew up in Saginaw, Michigan. So I'm north east of Lansing. The band started around, you know, the suburbs of Lansing in 2003. Guitar player Jim Hocking started the band with you would know him now as the drummer of the Ghost Inside, Andrew Tkachuk. So they started the band, I want to say, in their 10th or sophomore or junior year of high school.
Wow.
Which is madness. And then I joined my senior year of high school. So yes, but they are from Lansing. I'm again a little northeast in Saginaw, Michigan, just north of Flint.
Yeah.
But yeah, Michigan boys.
That's rad. My mom grew up in Michigan in Saugatuck.
Saugatuck, okay. Yeah. So she was on the much nicer side of Michigan.
Yeah.
much more scenic over there. Yeah, but yeah, Saugatuck's sure. Beautiful, man. Like the northwest of Michigan, like the coastline there where she was at is absolutely beautiful, you know.
Yeah.
People think of, when you think of Michigan, a lot of people are like, oh, Detroit, man, fuck yeah. And it's like, yes,
Detroit. Yeah, right.
But if you drive very far north, it's like untapped land. It's crazy. Like even where I'm from Saginaw, from there, once you drive north, there's not much. It's a lot of it's just lakes. It's the perfect, you know, kind of summer getaway. And Michigan is a sleeper state. It's beautiful up here.
Yeah. What was growing up like?
I'm from a small town, so again, you know, small town. I think I graduated with like 65 people.
Wow.
Very small. But lots of outdoor stuff. My dad, you know, he worked for the union. He was a union worker. A lot of Michigan residents, you know, they're union workers. They're in the plants. They're in, you know, Flint, Detroit, Motor City. You know what I mean? Like GM and Ford, like Chrysler. Like that's what you think of when you think of you know, lower Detroit and yeah. Michigan. You know, Motor City. So my dad was part of the union. He was a crane operator. He worked himself to the bone to make sure that me and my brothers and my mother had, a nice place to call home. We grew up on, you know, 19 acres. It was just out in the sticks away from everything. And, I've kept that same sentiment my whole life and keep me as far away from people as possible. When I'm not on the road, when I'm out here, I get my fix, man. I get my fill. I love chatting and hanging out with everybody, but when I'm home, don't talk to me.
Yeah. What got you into music?
My grandfather got me into music. My grandfather, crazy enough, not to go down this whole rabbit hole, my grandfather passed away this morning.
Sorry.
I appreciate it. He was a massive influence to me. He was a country artist. You know, he opened up for Merle Haggard a few times.
Oh, wow.
And toured and did that when he was in his early 20s, mid-20s, doing country. Him and my grandmother were still very musically inclined. My grandmother plays piano and sings. He played guitar and sang. My great-grandfather played violin and sang and banjo. They looked country music boys. And so he traded in his, like, one of his favorite guitars, his Guild guitar, acoustic, for me to grab my first set of bass gear, because I was originally a bass player. When I joined For the Fallen Dreams, I was a bass player. So he traded off his equipment for me to grab, you know, what was the start of my musical career. And it's kind of just been a constant since then. Over the course of 17 years of doing, you know, For the Fallen Dreams and my other band Legend, there's been moments where we've slowed down, but music has always been a constant. Yeah. I've always done, this is who I am. This is at least a large part of who I am.
Mm-hmm.
This is what I do. So he was, again, a massive influence in me to get into music. I fell into that with kids I went to school with who were also into, you know, alternative punk rock and new metal at the time, because we're talking, you know, late 90s, early 2000s. So to branch into the heavy stuff was kind of my drummer at the time in my band when I was in, had to have been middle school or sixth grade, seventh grade, eighth grade, whatever it was.
Yeah.
His older brother was like 4 or 5 years older than him and I. We couldn't drive. We were 12, 13 years old. Older brothers are always super cool, right? Especially at that age. You look at your older brother, like the coolest dude in the world. And he was like an Ozfest kid. He was going to Ozfest 98, 99. He was going to legitimate concerts.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he would come home from like a Soulfly show or like a, you know, Limp Bizkit or Mudvayne or Slipknot. And he would just have all these, you know, him and his friends be wearing trip pants and shit, wearing like all sorts of, you know, having their hair all spiked up and all this crazy stuff. So we thought they were super cool, man. So in turn, that's, you know, them playing Deftones and all this stuff around us, starting out us playing, you know, MXPX covers.
Yeah.
We kind of molded into this whole new thing of heavy music. And from there, I got the taste of it, and it's been nonstop since then. You know, obviously we all know, you know, starting out with that, your first phase of heavy music that kind of transforms into all the other subgenres. For the Fallen Dreams obviously was my big one that I've spent the most time in and did the most and accomplished the most in this band. Here we are, my friend, 15, 16 years later.
Yeah. There's always someone who's like, oh, you like heavy music, check this out. And that opens up another door, and it's the never ending rabbit hole if you want it to be.
Yeah. For metalcore, for me, it was Poison the Well. Poison the Well was like the band that kind of shifted me into breakdown metal. because I mean, Slipknot, you know, I mean, absolutely had, like, you can't get any heavier than Self-Titled or Isle or any of that stuff, but like breakdown metalcore style metal, they were, because Ozfest at the time was kind of experimenting with bands like that. You were seeing bands, you know, kind of making that transition. I want to say, there was an MTV show called, like, I don't think it was Making the Band, but it was something of that effect. It was like some like Ozfest spinoff on MTV at the time, where there was like five bands, like a big battle of the bands thing on MTV. And I remember there was this band called like, A Dozen Furies.
Okay.
How old are you?
38.
Okay, so we're in the same realm here.
Yeah.
We're about to feel very old. So, yeah, MTV did this thing, and there was this band I remember called A Dozen Furies, and they were, you know, it was Ozfest metal, but it was dancing the line of metalcore, and it sounded like Poison the Well. And getting some of those later Ozfest demos that they would give out at, you know, Ozfest 2000, 2001, would have bands like Poison the Well on them.
Yeah, or Hatebreed at the time, right?
Great example. The perfect and one of the biggest crossover bands from that style of like metal into this is hardcore, this is punk, this is metalcore, you know what I mean? So that was the door. That was the door of Hatebreed, Poison the Well, bands like that. So, you know, transitioned into me becoming a vocalist for one of the oldest metalcore bands still doing it right now.
Yeah.
Or at least, well, I feel like it.
Yeah. What was the scene like in Lansing, like, or in that general area? Was there something happening locally, or was it just like you had to go down like drive hours to be involved?
Great question. There was something very special happening in mid and northern Michigan at that time. The new metal wave was running rampant through the US as it was. But a lot of these smaller towns, even the ones I was from, it was the Tri-Cities. So it was multiple little small populations of places like Flint, which was 100,000 people in the city of Flint. Detroit was an hour and a half away from me. So if you wanted to go see a big show, like a Hatebreed or Mudvayne or Slipknot or whoever, Cypress Hill, you know, you had to go downstate. You had to go down to Detroit. But because music back then, it was so heavy, music was very, it was very new, right? It was out of the grunge era. It was into this heavy, the new metal era, the really heavy alternative, stuff that was sparking across the US in small towns and big towns. And in our little small area of mid Michigan, we were having these shows at a place called Jamestown Hall. That was a VFW hall. And it was, we were having, you know, it was maybe 200 cap inside there, and they were packing 500-600 people into these shows, where people were out on the porch looking through the windows, and the windows were open, and like it was just smashed in there. And I'm not kidding when I say they would pack 400-500 people in this 200 cap VFW, a fire marshal's nightmare. But it was great, man. But then, you know, like guys like me, you know, I was very involved. There was other guys up there, the Dalton brothers, who run a festival called Dirt Fest up here. This is when they were starting to book stuff. They're younger. I want to say it's their cousin, Matt and Andy Dalton. They still book shows to this day, and they still book these their talent buyers at the Crowfoot in Pontiac. Anyway, so their cousin, he was my age, and he was big into like alternative grindcore and metalcore. So he started booking shows at this VFW. So it wasn't just local bands. Now all of a sudden we're getting Misery Signals there. We're getting Psyopus. We're getting Bodies in the Gears of the Apparatus. We're getting Ed Gein. We're getting all these grind bands and all the, you know, Through the Eyes of the Dead. Now we're starting to get like some of this alternative metal and metalcore stuff.
Yeah.
Coming up to our small little area of Michigan, and it was wild, man. It was really wild to watch all that transition, and it gave For the Fallen Dreams the chance to be heard, to be a band. You know, like, we dialed in our style of music, and we were all very good at what we were doing that young, and we were playing with bands like Misery Signals. We were playing in front of these national touring bands at the time, of a smaller space, of course, but we were playing in front of these bands that were older than us and touring full time around the States. And it was like, hey, we're pulling just as many people as some of these bands are. And these bands are fucking with us. They're like side stage, you know, like jamming out, and we're having after the shows. They're like, you guys are sick. Like, have you guys toured before? And we're kind of just like, hold on a second. We can do this. Like, this is a real thing. And then from there, the band just started booking regional stuff. Yeah. We started playing, you know, throughout Michigan and booking stuff in Ohio. And then it caught fire. It caught fire very early on, 2004 and 2005, 2006. And here we are, I guess. But the scene was absolutely great in Michigan. And without it being that way and having that, you know, that big surge going on of heavy music and metalcore and new metal and all that being very, very interesting at the time, that alternative culture, it really gave us some feet to stand on and to try and become a real band.
Yeah. Yeah. That scene at the time was so special too, because it's like, yeah, Shai Hulud would come through town and they'd be playing a church basement and it'd be like, all right, if my local band can get on the bill, then we get to play for a couple hundred people. And like, that could make or break you, right?
that's very, very true. And that was for us, that was always the goal. It was like, what do we got to do to get on this show? We'll play 15 minutes. We don't care. Can we play 15 minutes?
Yeah.
I have too many bands on it. We don't care. We'll play 10 minutes. Let's play three songs.
Yeah. You know, we'll borrow somebody's gear and play two songs and try to blow the socks off the place.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's, you know, that's a lost art form, man. Yeah. Talking about things like this really make you realize how different things really are now.
Yeah.
Because that's not a thing. You don't. If a band were to roll up in Sacramento right now and say, hey, let us play 15 minutes, the promoter would tell him to go fuck himself.
Yeah.
And that would be it.
Yeah.
But back then it wasn't like that. I remember searching MySpace, going out on regional tours. For the Fallen Dreams went out on just a headlining tour. We booked, I don't know, 2-3 weeks. And we had maybe 6 or 7 shows. So we would just drive to the next state or go on MySpace and see what shows were playing in a certain state or a certain city and contact the promoter or just show up and do exactly what we just said. Hey, can I play? Can we play? Give us 10 minutes.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. How'd you end up in For the Fallen Dreams?
Goes back to what we were just talking about, local bands, me being very, very determined to be in a successful, metalcore band. So again, those same shows that my buddy was booking in Saginaw, my small little corner of Michigan, where he was booking Misery Signals and Shai Hulud and booking all these other bands, For the Fallen Dreams was an up and coming local band. So my buddy would book them to come out here from up north to play these shows as a local Lansing band. And I was in my local, you know, hometown hero metal band at the time. So, you know, I was very familiar with the guys. We all became friends because we were just two young local bands. I was in this band called Aries Latum, which would stay together for a long time after I left and eventually turn into the band King 810, which is crazy. So that band was like my last band that I was in that did really well for being a local band before, For the Fallen Dreams, kind of scooped me up. They were looking for a bass player and I had a buddy who was playing for them at the time. And, he's like, hey man, why don't you come play bass, for the Fallen Dreams? Like, we're getting ready to go on tour in a couple weeks. We need a bass player. Do you want to do it? And I was like, oh, I'm in high school, man. I can't just leave. And that's exactly what I did though. Yeah. I said, fuck school. I'm going on tour. And that's what I did. We went on tour. That was the tour. I left school and it was a 4-week run with a band called La Gia. They were on Ferret Records at the time. So we were like, okay, if we're on tour with a signed band, we got a chance. So, that was my green light. I told my parents, I told, my grandfather and they were all like, hey man, if that's what you want to do. You know, there's never any pushback. They knew, like, I've always been headstrong in that way. If I said I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it and I'm going to figure it out. So they brought me on as a bass player. We did the local thing for a while and then I split and we went on tour and really since then the band has been touring. you know, because that was 2006 and we released Changes in 2008.
Yeah. So. How'd you guys get connected with Rise Records?
I left them a heart emoji on their MySpace page. I'm not kidding. I left a heart emoji on their MySpace page because we were just fucking with what they were doing. We loved, like, they were like the label.
Yeah.
And we just showed them some internet emoji love, and they commented back to it with a heart emoji and then sent us a direct message and said, do you guys want to sign with Rise Records? And that was it.
That's amazing. It
was, yeah. For being 18, 19 years old at the time, man, it was wild. Like, I remember like checking the band's MySpace page and being like, yes, like we did it. Like, I mean, but you know, in the grand, going back and looking at it now, like we did, that was a big deal. That was what paved the road for this band to still be doing it 15, 16 years later.
Yeah.
Craig Erickson at the time, he was the CEO. He ran the label. He started the label. Still a great friend of mine, a great guy. You know, the team at Rise is still very small, still know the guys, Sean Haydorn and Chris Ruby, great people. Great history with those guys. But yeah, the Rise thing was just, you know, it's as simple as that. And we had like, yeah, like the guys in American Me, and It Prevails, like it goes back to the same thing. Like we were just both young bands and we mm-hmm. fucked with each other and we liked what we were doing. Yeah. And, the American Me and, It Prevails guys, told Rise, like, these guys are good. So I'm sure it was a bird in their ear.
Yeah.
That made the MySpace heart emoji thing a real push. But yeah, man, it was as simple as that. And that's, we did, let's see here. Two, three, we did five records with Rise.
Yeah. 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 I was going to say, it seemed like you have a good relationship between all the For the Fallen Dreams and the Legend stuff that all came out on Rise. Like, it seems a good relationship with the label.
Yeah, man. Again, like, you know, like, it's, you get to that point too, though, where it's your mixing business with pleasure, because we've known them for so long. We were one of the longest Rise bands that were on Rise for a very, very long time. You know, I've released all of my material besides this upcoming record, Rise Records. You know, so, but I became so close with those guys that, you know, like, business and pleasure is a weird thing in this industry. So we were getting to the point where I knew the guys so well, and For the Fallen Dreams and Legend both weren't these juggernaut bands like Dance Gavin or Sleeping with Sirens, right?
Yeah.
We have always done well. We've cemented our name in this niche of metalcore. But it's hard to go sometimes and try and make your case to your friends and your label when you, at the end of the day, you have to make smart business decisions mm-hmm. for us and them. And, you know, and they're thinking, this band, you know, they've been around forever. They're great friends of ours and we've done all their records, and maybe it hasn't been the most profitable thing mm-hmm. we've ever done, but it does enough. But at some point the band had to like stand on its own two feet and say, this is what we need. This is what we're doing. Are you in or are you out? And it just didn't work out that way to continue with them.
Yeah.
But I love the guys. I really do, man. Sean Haydorn, Chris Ruby, the team that they have over there, Matthew Garner, they're all great guys. I have nothing but great things to say. Craig Erickson, again, still a good friend of mine. So great label. They did a lot for us. I'm very humbled and appreciative of what we were able to accomplish with that label.
Nice. But you leave the band after Changes drops. What led to that decision?
I think I was overwhelmed as a young kid. I was overwhelmed with being on the road 10, 11 months out of the year. I think it's just being young is really what it was. At the end of the day, it was kind of just making a rash decision and saying, yeah, I'm done with this. I'm going home, and kind of waiting for everyone to say, don't go home. We need you. And I'm like, oh yeah, you're not gonna try and give me a stay. Well, fuck you guys. just being 19 years old is really what it was. But for every action, there's a reaction. And that's the way this always had to play out. Mm-hmm. It might be my, you know, my old brain saying like, oh man, like, you know, it's destiny, but it had to be this way. I had to leave to do Legend and carve a nice little, niche with what I did in Legend. And then For the Fallen Dreams had to go do stuff on their own without me that did really well and then did very poorly. And then I had to come back to bring back the core fan base of the Changes fan base. And there was that whole era, like the return of me back to the band. And then it's all part of it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, so, but to answer your question, it was really just being 19 and kind of just being kind of stupid and not really thinking through my decisions. But I was beat, man. I was overwhelmed at that young. You know, I remember there was a lot of things going on at home for me. I have two younger brothers, so I remember them, like, I remember missing out on like lots of their, like, you know, their school games, and mm-hmm. they were like superstar athletes in high school, and I was missing out on that. So it was a combination of things, but yeah, we got through it, and here we are.
Yeah. When Legend started, was that like, I mean, it's pretty quick after you left For the Fallen Dreams, but did you know you wanted to do things differently with that band, not tour as much, or was it just like you just miss music and like knew you made a mistake?
I think that's really just what it was, man. It was really just like, ah, shit.
I fucked up.
Yeah, I fucked up. But it was to have complete reins of what I was doing.
Yeah.
To do something, Legends obviously a different band, so to do things what I wanted to do at the time, like having it be a little bit heavier, having it be a little more darker, you know, For the Fallen Dreams was a little more of the Misery Signal, Shai Hulud-esque, the melodic metalcore stuff, and I love that stuff, mm-hmm. but you know, when leaving, I wanted to do something a little bit heavier. I wanted to do something a little more darker, I guess. So yeah, it was different. It was fun. That was a whole other thing, though. You know, I could go on and on about how Legend then did, you know, this kind of the same trajectory that For the Fallen Dreams did. We came out with the Pale Horse, and the Pale Horse, you know, like, not to sound like a dick or anything, but it was a very influential record in itself as well. It influenced a lot of younger, you know, gent metalcore bands you know, I have no shame in being able to say like, hey, I'm proud of these releases, and they did things.
Yeah.
So that was cool, man. Like it all had to happen the way that it happened.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. With your return to For the Fallen Dreams, and just like, if you look at the Wikipedia page, which could be inaccurate, but it's like the past members list is a mile long. Like, is it tough to like, just keep a band going knowing like, all right, this time we got a new drummer and a new guitarist. Is it just like,
It is a very inaccurate list.
Okay.
And I have no shame like saying like there's been, you know, a lot of members of For the Fallen Dreams, because there has. But that list is very inaccurate. Because a lot of these guys were just filling guys. You know, there's always been a constant. It's always been Jim, it's always been Andrew, it's always been me. In the era that I was gone, it was always Kalen. Kalen wrote Backburner, Kalen wrote Wasted Youth. Kalen is back and playing bass for us now. Andrew wrote with Jim, wrote Changes and Relentless, and some of Heavy Hearts. Like, it's always been me, Jim, Andrew, Kalen. There's key guys in this band that's the mainstay. And some of these other guys were just session people for either records, or they were fill-ins for one or two tours or a year of touring. You know, I can't speak on everyone that was in and out of the band while I was gone. Because they definitely had a moment there where I was looking at them from the Legend camp, being like, what the hell is Four of the Fallen Dreams doing? How many guys they got coming in though? But yeah, it's some of that stuff, you know, and again, it goes back to the band being a band for so long that, you know, when you're 19, 20 years old, it's not going to be weird that you have three or four different bass players that kind of say, I don't want to do this. I want to get a real job. I want to go to college. Or, you know, being that young and starting a band, you have a lot of uncertainties. So you really have to go through the growing pains of just, is this for you or is it not? Because it is not an easy life. And I know band people like to say that, and fans either you can understand, but like no one will truly understand what it's like unless you've lived this life of how inconsistent and it is. And it can be financially, emotionally, like it's all very, either you got it or you don't. And so some of these guys, you know, it was just growing pains, you know, they did the band for a year, like, fuck yeah, I want to sleep in a van and eat McDonald's every day. And after doing that for, you know, 3-4 tours, they were like, fuck this.
Yeah.
So, the Wikipedia page, member wise, there's definitely some people who have been in and out, but again, like that thing, man, it's funny. I feel like at this point people are just making accounts and going in there and just adding themselves while it gets longer. So I'm going to start doing the same thing, start adding random names from TV shows or whatever it is.
Yeah. Yeah. How did COVID affect you? Like, I know Legend put out some music in 2021, but like, I mean, did you have tours planned for either band or album releases that you ended up sitting on? Or
we did, yeah. We For the Fallen Dreams, we had a run in 2019. It was the last run that we did. It was direct for Of Mice and Men. Great guys, great tour, had a blast. And then, you know, COVID hit, and we had a run overseas planned with Crystal Lake and Fit for an Autopsy. We had a Canadian run with our guitar player, now Damon's other band, Of Virtue. We were going to do like a 2-week run in Canada. So we had some stuff on the books, and then, you know, we even got, well, during COVID, before we knew how serious it was, there was a show in Singapore with Iron Maiden. Oh, and wow. It was just going to be, I want to say it was For the Fallen Dreams, Dragon Force, and Iron Maiden.
Holy shit.
Which is madness. It would have been insane. So because that, something like that in Europe is wild. Something like that in the United States is wild. You do an Iron Maiden show in a third world country who doesn't get a lot of these big, you know, Western tours. Mm-hmm. I shouldn't say third world, but like a definitely not Western. And that is, you know, you're playing in front of, I don't know, dare I say 40, 50,000, maybe more, who knows. Yeah. So some crazy stuff on the books at the time. And then, you know, it kind of, everyone saying our you know, our management at the time and booking saying like, okay, this is actually like serious, guys. Like this COVID thing that they're talking about is serious. We're going to have to cancel this. We're going to have to cancel that. And then everyone was waiting. And then it just never stopped. It just kept going, getting worse. So it was, I think that's us and a lot of the artists who were still just kind of wondering what to do. That's when they kind of sunk themselves into the writing process, because it's few and far between where a full-time touring band has the time to sit back for months on end and say, okay, let's reevaluate, let's write some music. Because in this game, the longer you're inactive, people forget about you.
Yeah.
And it's quick, you know, so staying constant and staying busy and always putting out either music or touring, it's hard sometimes to sit back, reflect and put out your best music, you know? So, COVID was a terrible time, but it was also, for artists as far as reflection you know, kind of just going through the motions of figuring out what's our next move here. Mm-hmm. What do we want to be? What do we want to do? You know? So it was a good thing and a bad thing for us.
Yeah. So how, with this record, did you, a band from Michigan, end up on a Rising Empire Records?
Funny, right?
They're a great label.
Yeah, absolutely. They have some great bands. Like, and what they're doing over there in Europe, and some of these European artists, they're massive. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's a different world over there, and we know that even touring. You know, we can do United States runs, and they could be great. It could bomb. You never know. There's so much going on at all times over here. You're always competing with shows. Europe is different. Europe is a lot more calculated. So when you go over there, and if you break over in Europe, it's a whole different world, you know? So we had a very successful headlining run over there before COVID, in support of our last record, Six. We did a headliner. We did, I think, four or five different, like, really solid festivals. We did direct support, on a few of these festivals, you know, playing, you know, as a mainstay, playing late at night, on the main stage, in front of thousands of people. So we were making some waves over there. It was going really well. So I'm assuming, you know, they never really told us how, but they got a wind of For the Fallen Dreams rocking and rolling in Europe. And, we got in contact with them. We had a lot of the material already written. Mm-hmm. So, they were kind of like, hey, you know, we're interested. What do you guys, here's what we think. We believe in the band. We know that you guys have been around for a long time. We know that you need, you know, you're trying to reestablish yourself in a different space, but still just trying to keep, you know, things consistently moving. And, the offer they sent was something that interested us. Their passion for the project interested us. It felt very good, to be a priority, and that's no dig on anybody, but it felt good to be a priority on a label, that believed in you so much that they were like, whatever we got to do to make it happen, let's make it happen. And, you know, For the Fallen Dreams is long overdue for that. We deserve that. We deserve that respect, and we deserve that attention. We put a lot of work into this. So to get that from a label, even though they're from, you know, Munich, Germany, who'd have thought?
Yeah.
Just some boys from graduating in a class of 60 people to a European label. It's different. It's definitely different. And it's different how we've done things in the past. But they've been great, and I'm very excited, to continue the relationship on this record, and just kind of, both help build each other. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, they don't have like a gigantic, US roster. Mm-hmm. So just helping them establish themselves here by having us, and us establishing a little bit more of a foothold over there in Europe, helps us, helps both. So we're just excited to be here. We're excited for the opportunity to continue to put our music out and have people hear it.
Yeah. Yeah. Are there like challenges that were unexpected with having a European label?
Absolutely. Sometimes it's playing the time change game, and then sometimes my German is non-existent, and their English is great, but there's still like a, sometimes like I'll explain something and they're like, what do you mean? But they've been great, man. The biggest thing is just the time change. That's a little rough. But yeah.
Cool. This album is out Friday, self-titled. Does the self-titled have to be like a reestablishing yourself? You talked about taking time to slow down and rethink what you did. This record is very different musically for the Fallen Dreams. Even Six, like listening to that today, that's a pretty mellow, chill, but it's still like melodic hardcore, and like, you're doing something completely different on this record, diving into new metal spaces, a lot of rapping and spoken word pieces. Like, did that drive the decision for self-titling this record?
For sure, man. I think a lot of the direction that the band took this record was based off of what I was trying to accomplish vocally.
Okay.
You know, this being the first record that I've ever sang on, me kind of reevaluating and looking back at who I wanted to be, and what influenced me, what got me into this thing in the first place.
Yeah.
You know, it was a lot of me just with the self-reflection and kind of taking it to the boys and saying, hey, this is what I want to do, man. Like, how do you guys feel? And then them all being very supportive and saying, let's do it. Let's go for it. Let's write some new stuff. Let's really not hold back at all. Let's really just try and put out the best possible music we can and experiment, have fun with it. And again, like, it was catering to what I was trying to accomplish as a singer now, like as not just a, you know, just a screamer, you know what I mean? Yeah. Trying to do the spoken word and the slides and rhymes and, but then like just singing big hooky choristers or trying different kinds of screams and different cadences. Like there's so many different flavors of my voice throughout this entire record. That was great for me. It felt good to be uncomfortable. I was so used to just, we all know I can scream and that's great.
Yeah.
And I'm still dialing it in. I'm still finding new ways to utilize my screaming voice in different tones and textures. But to have, the opportunity to not feel confident in myself was good. It was good to say, I don't know if this is any good. What do you guys think? And to have the producers or the guys say, nah, that ain't it. Or try something different. Like that's good for you. It's good to challenge yourself. It's good to be uncomfortable. So that in itself helped shape the music. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like I get stuff sent to me every now and again of people saying like, oh man, listen to this stuff. It sounds like it's butt rock. It's dad rock. It's like, if you take away the style of vocals that are most comfortable for me to sing and that I like to sing, if you take that away, this is the heaviest For the Fallen Dreams record that's ever come out. We're talking, you know, F sharp tracks and you know, dive bombs and guitar solos. Like it doesn't get much heavier, but you know, people love to associate it with different things as soon as they hear one thing.
Yeah.
But you know, again, it goes back to just this record being a definite shift came with just wanting to push the envelope. Me really saying, let's do something different. Let's try and just have fun with it. There cannot be any restraints. You know, we're a little bit older. I grew up in the heyday of what we talked about in the beginning of this podcast. And that's stuff that influenced me to be who I am. Like Chad Gray and Corey Taylor's and Chino Moreno and all these icons, these new metal and alternative metal icons, the Fred Durst, you know, the Chesters, like, I would not be who I am. I wouldn't be here with those bands. So it felt most comfortable for me to just be me. And naturally that's always where I sat. I just tailored For the Fallen Dreams differently because we were always told for years as young kids, you're a melodic metalcore band and you could only do that. Mm-hmm. You know, with age comes wisdom, with age comes, I don't give a fuck. So, so we just did what came most natural. And this record was a product of that. It was never forced. There's not a single track on this record that we're like, do you think we can make it sound more nu metal? Like it just flowed. And I think if you listen to the record from start to finish, and you give it a chance and you don't associate it with, well, it doesn't sound like Changes, and you really just give it a chance as its own thing, I truly believe you'll be able to find at least a few songs that you enjoy. Because there's something for everybody on this record.
Yeah. Yeah. There'll always be people who'll be like, oh, the first record's the best and I don't like anything after that. But it seems like this is a good time to like, there seems to be a nu metal, not revival, but maybe an appreciation where it's like bands are incorporating more nu metal sounds into hardcore and metalcore. And it's just like, and people just being like, like West Borland kicks ass at guitar.
Right. And that's one of them things. And I'm glad you said that because he is top three favorite guitar players of all time. Yeah. Like one of the most unique guitarists of this whole thing, man, of the past, you know, 30, 40 years. The dude is just unreal. So yeah, you know, just enjoying it, man. And originally to get back to that question. So that's the reason for self-titled. It's saying, hey, this is what we're doing and that we enjoy it. And this is a rebirth. This is a new thing. And, we hope you all are here for it. But if you're not, we're still going to keep doing it.
Yeah.
We enjoy what we're doing.
Yeah. Any lyrical themes or inspiration on this record that you were hoping to convey?
There's nothing too specific. I've never been one to write a concept album of one thing. It limits you as an artist. It limits, in my opinion, at least. Like, if you feel like, oh man, I'd really love to talk about this, but I can't because the whole record is about like DMT and you know, I don't like being pigeonholed to just one style.
Yeah.
I shouldn't say majority of, but there are a lot of songs on the record though that were kind of written in a darker space of my own mortality, of the general, my family or just life in general, the life cycles, you know, life and death and the in between and the grieving process and lots of things. Like, that was something that came with the self-reflection of having too much time during COVID. Right. So think about like some dark shit, right?
Yeah.
So there's definitely some songs, more than a few, that are written in that mindset. But again, you know, everything is a little different. Whatever is something I wanted to touch on, I wrote about. And I think that's kind of always been the theme for the Fallen Dreams, is just being able to connect with people by writing about whatever's going on at the time, whether it be, you know, anxiety and depression or grieving or whatever. You know what I mean? I think that's when you get the most genuine stuff, is when you're able to just, hey, this is what I'm feeling, and I wrote this song when I was feeling that. I might not feel that way in 6 weeks, but I felt this way now, you know, and that's where you fans are able to say, hey man, like, I remember when I felt that way. And that's it's the best way to connect with your fans.
Yeah.
So yeah, a little bit of everything. Necessary emissary.
Shifting tides, they flow right through me. Trump just always go free will. Record is out Friday. You guys are currently on tour. What's the rest of 2023 look like for you guys?
Staying busy, my friend. Just getting back out on the road, planning some more stuff in the States, some festival stuff, some regional fill-in shows between those festivals, European stuff, just filling up the calendar. You know, we got a great team in place right now, so just staying busy. You know, capitalizing on the powerhouse that this record is, and just trying to get the most out of it and get the most ears on it, and then just have fun, man. Like, I've said it a million times on this tour to people, once this shit stops becoming fun, it's time to go home.
Yeah.
And we're still having fun, so just enjoying it each day.
Thanks for listening to As the Story Grows. Our intro music was written and composed by Jeremy Hunt. The As the Story Grows theme is by Bob Nana. If you like what you hear, subscribe wherever you get your podcast and give us a rating and review. If you'd like to support the show financially, you can join us at patreon.com/asthestorygrows. Be a part of our community and join the ongoing conversation over on Discord. If you enjoy this episode, share it on social media with your friends. Much appreciated, and thanks for listening. I never felt so young and alive as when I'm diving into a tomb. And now I'm learning as I listen along, and the wheels are turning, and I started a song. One good word, and I'm gone. Right.
just attacking, never.